Blog Talk Radio.
The execution-style killing of Michael Brown, an unarmed 18-year-old walking in the middle of the street in Ferguson, Missouri, has stirred the moral fibers of an American society wreaked in ethnic tension, racial discrimination, and police misconduct. On today's show, we'll examine what happened in Ferguson and explore what's wrong in America when black men outnumber all other ethnic groups in violence and wrongful death in this country. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. Thank you so much for tuning in today, whether you're listening live or listening part of our archive. We really appreciate you being a part of our audience. Been off the air for 2 weeks, been traveling and doing some work with several conventions, and now my convention cycle season has wound down for the summertime and will ramp up again for the fall. But I hope that you have enjoyed your summer if you are here in North America or part of the Northern Hemisphere. I know that I have many friends who listen in other parts of the world, so if it's winter, I hope your summer is going to be great coming up. And for those of us who are involved in summer seasons, I hope that you've had a great one. Schools are back in session. Young people around the country are going back to school, including my 6-year-old granddaughter who is starting first grade, really hard to believe, along with her sister who's going back to preschool. So hope this is a really pleasant time for you. We want to devote our time, and I've been off the air, but I've been glued to the television and just been on social media like crazy as a result of the killing of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. We're going to dedicate our time today talking about that case and what has happened, give you some things to think about, and give you some homework assignments as well. The first thing I'd like for you to do is you can follow me on Twitter. I have been tweeting quite a bit about this, and I am tweeting now pretty regularly, several posts a day, and even more so regarding this case. So you can go back and see the number of tweets that I have dedicated to this case regarding Michael Brown. My handle, Twitter handle, is Global Carol. That's GlobalCarole, Global Carol with an E on the end. And you can always go back and see the posts that I have put up there for the last 2+ weeks, now going on 3 weeks, regarding Michael Brown. I also tweeted pretty extensively with his funeral that took place this past Monday. So if you missed the funeral, you can go and see some pictures, you can see what took place, and see pretty much the order of service. I'm going to probably post his funeral program on my website in the coming days so you can see that as well. So that's number one. Number two is you can go to my website, tellcarol.com. That's www.tellcarole.com. And go to the blog section, and you will see the blog that says Michael Brown, Open Season on Black Men, and you can read the timeline. It's a very comprehensive timeline that I retrieved from USA Today. I have part of it on my website. You can go to USA Today through the link and see the entire timeline that's taken place since this took place, starting on Saturday, August 9th, 2014. And again, it's a very extensive timeline so that you can get up to speed on what has taken place. I know there's a lot going on in the world. We've got ISIS, we've got Gaza that hopefully the ceasefire will hold. We have events like here in Boston, a very tragic event where a young woman, 22 years old, was hit by a stray bullet during a parade last week, and killed instantly. So we have those kind of tragic cases. We have wonderful things like young people going back to school. So I know there's a lot going on, but I would encourage you, because this case is going to be in the news for quite some time. It may not be on the front page at this point because the funeral has happened and the investigation goes forward, but because there has been no arrest And because there's been no a response from the grand jury, because they're still involved in the investigation, that could go on through October. I would encourage you to read up on it and have a sense of what actually happened and what took place, in addition to the outcome of the killing itself and the awful rioting that happened, along with the peaceful protesting that persevered and all the other dynamics. This case is a portrait of America. It is a portrait of the dynamics, the tension, the conflict, the absolute need for diversity in the United States, and that is the significance of it. And I think what happened when the case broke, and again, I was in conference mode, and I was going back and forth to various conferences, but I just sort of stuck my head in and paid attention to this case because of its significance. So I want to go through a couple of things. Again, you can read up on the background case. Michael Brown, 18 years old, had recently graduated from high school. He was walking in the middle of the street with his friend and was approached and stopped by the police. The police moved ahead. They apparently told him to get out of the street and move to the sidewalk. His friend said, "We're going to our destination, officer. We will be getting there shortly. Just give us a little bit of time." The police drove ahead, came back. This is one police officer. Came back. Something happened, whether it was an altercation, words were shared between the three men, but something happened, and then shots were fired. Many shots were fired, as many as 10 shots were fired, and Michael Brown was left in the street dead. He was shot at least 6 times, 2 to the head and 6 to the arm. There are eyewitnesses that said that in the middle of this gunfire, he turned around, put his hands up, and was then shot at least twice more that mortally wounded him. We do not have the police report, which is a bit odd at this point, almost 3 weeks into this case, and that is bringing up a lot of ire with people. Secondly, Michael Brown, after being shot and killed, the other person that he was with was not shot and killed. He was not harmed at all. There were eyewitnesses. He was left in the street for 4.5 hours, at least 4.5 hours. And I would also encourage you to, you can go to my YouTube channel. I will probably put these links in my website. I actually have a young woman that I know who was involved in some of the cleanup work after this took place on, she was there on Monday, August 11th, and she is from St. Louis. She lived in Ferguson for part of her time. Taylor Irons is her name, and you can hear an accounting of what took place during these early days from her perspective. So according to Taylor and others, and now the police, this gentleman was left in the street for more than 3.5-4 hours. And just was left uncovered for much of that time, and then finally his body was covered. He was not allowed to be removed by the undertakers. And the police officer, Darren Wilson, who did the shooting, was pacing back and forth looking at the body during this awful time period. This ultimately led to an eruption of protests, first protest, and then violence and looting, and an overreaction by the Ferguson Police Department. Ferguson has 22,000 people, I believe, in that town. It is a small town. About over 60% of the people in that town are African American. It is probably a middle to blue collar community, and most of the city leaders are white, including the police department. There are only 3 black police officers on the police force. On the school committee, there are no black people. There are 3 Latinos, and the rest are white. And it is probably replicated the same way in other parts of leadership in this small town. Now, this is also part of your homework assignment that I think is very important to understand the dynamics of Missouri and this part of the country, because it has a direct reflection on this case. Missouri way back when the country was being founded. And again, you can go to Wikipedia, you can go to many different sources and check this out for yourself, was involved in the Missouri Compromise. I'm going to read this very quickly just to give you a sense of what this is all about. And this is from Wikipedia. The Missouri Compromise was passed in 1820 between the pro-slavery and anti-slavery factions in the United States Congress, involving primarily the regulation of slavery in the Western Territory. So obviously Missouri, before it became a state, was purchased and was a territory, and so it was included as a Western Territory. It prohibited in the former Louisiana Territory, north of the parallel 36 degrees by 30 feet north, except with the boundaries of the proposed state of Missouri. The 1820 passage of the Missouri Compromise took place during the presidency of James Monroe. The Missouri Compromise was implicitly repealed by the Kansas-Nebraska Act, submitted by Congress by Stephen Douglas, who actually ran against Abraham Lincoln, in January 1854. The act opened Kansas Territory and Nebraska to slavery and future admission of slave states by allowing white male settlers in those territories to determine through popular sovereignty whether they would allow such slavery within each territory. Thus, the Kansas-Nebraska Act effectively undermined the prohibition of slavery in territories north of the 36-degree latitude, which had been established by the Missouri Compromise. So you have a compromise that's put in place, and then you've got the Kansas-Nebraska Act that obliterates that as well. So, again, you can go and read up on this, and this impacted Missouri. So by the time you got to the Civil War, Missouri was a slave state, but it stayed in the Union. You had some slave states like Virginia and Georgia and Florida and others that left the Union and became part of the Confederacy. And then you had slave states or border states like Missouri that were allowed to keep their slaves, almost like a payment for them staying and remaining in the Union. Now, you're probably saying, why are you going back that far? That was well over 100 years ago. Well, it definitely impacted what's going on now in the state of Missouri and in that region. And it actually has been brought up by many pundits throughout the week, the last 3 weeks. Also, I would encourage you to go and read up on Missouri as a state. Abraham Lincoln, as I mentioned earlier, had a very interesting cabinet, and you can read about Missouri in the book A Team of Rivals by Doris Kern Goodwin. I'm looking at my copy right now because one of his chief cabinet members was from Missouri and owned slaves. So, again, we're talking about slavery and conflicts and black and white issues that go back more than 100 years, directly impacting and related to Missouri. The third piece that I'd like for you to study and read up on is the Dred Scott case. And the Dred Scott case was one of the catalyst events that actually led to the Civil War. And again, I'm going to read this very quickly, but again, it's important to remember. Dred Scott versus Sanford took place in 1857, was a landmark decision by the United States Supreme Court in which the court held that African Americans, whether enslaved or free, could not become American citizens and therefore had no standing to sue in federal court. This was regarding a slave, Dred Scott, who was owned by a military officer who was moved from place to place between the territories that I just talked about, and that included Missouri and also the state of Illinois, which was a free state and did not, they had abolished slavery. So during that time when this officer was fulfilling his military duty, he had Dred Scott and Dred Scott's wife, who I believe her name was Harriet, and he loaned them out in Illinois at one point in time to do various manual labor and other duties and tasks while he was serving in another part of the United States. So during the time that he was in military service, his slaves were actually operating in free states. At one point, Dred Scott was moved with the wife and Dred Scott's husband, wife that is, to Missouri. And so there is implications in terms of Missouri. So bottom line, he lost. He was not considered a free person, even though he was working and operating as a free person at part of his time when he was working when his master was in another part of the country. And that was one of the forerunners of the Civil War, because you have this conflict going on. You have a slave working in Illinois, and Illinois is a free state. And then he's moved to other parts of the country, including Wisconsin, this territory, which is also impacted by this Kansas-Nebraska Act. So very complicated, but extremely important in terms of how this case was impacting what was then going to lead up to the Civil War. Ultimately, the master died, and ultimately Dred Scott's freedom was purchased by abolitionists, who then set him free and set his wife free. Unfortunately, he didn't live much longer than this particular case, and then we had the Civil War, and you know, obviously we know what happened there. So, yeah, I know it's a lot of history, but it all adds up to this tension that is going on right now in Ferguson, Missouri. So we get back on track, and I would also encourage you to, again, listen to Taylor Irons MP3. It's on my YouTube channel. You can go to Carol Copeland Thomas, and you can pick it up. And then there are various eyewitness accounts that lead up to what actually happened in Ferguson almost 3 weeks ago that I would also encourage you to study and read up on. So we have this case with this young man who was at least shot 6 times. There were probably a total of 10 bullets, according to a new audio clip that is being investigated by the FBI, that clearly you can hear at least 10 shots that were used in this case. And you have a black young man who is deceased now. His funeral was on Monday. The country is upset. There have been protests. There's this imbalance in terms of leadership in this particular town. They had to very quickly move in Captain Ron Johnson, who is part of the Missouri Highway Patrol Department, to oversee the policing in a town where the police went amok. They were completely out of control with way too much equipment, SWAT people coming into McDonald's, arresting reporters, people getting tear gassed on the streets. It just went way out of control. And so as a result of that, we have a lot of tension that continues to fester in this town. We have a police officer, Darren Wilson, who is apparently in hiding, and we don't even know what the police report says. Word got out, but we don't have the police report that said that Michael Brown was reaching toward the police officer's gun, and that's what caused this altercation. But I was listening to a program, news program, last night, that was talking about this particular line used by some police officers, where it is justification for shooting a person that is suspicious, and overused in the case of black men, overused in the case of black men. The challenge that we have is that in this country, and really crystallized in this case with Michael Brown, is that we have a disproportionate number of black men who are being shot and killed by the police or would-be police in the case of Trayvon Martin, or involved in activities that where they are victimized and killed just needlessly so in this country. Now, I know what it's like to lose a black son. My son was killed in a car accident, so totally different set of circumstances. But still killed right after high school, 6 days after high school, and he was driving the car. Totally different set of circumstances. But accidental death is also contributing to the higher number of black young men who are needlessly killed in this country. We have another case that I'm paying attention to that happened shortly before the Michael Brown case, and this is in Ohio. It's with a 22-year-old called, his name is John Crawford III. He was in a Walmart. He was apparently in the toy section. He was looking at products in the toy section and in the video section. He was on the phone talking to his girlfriend. At some point, he picked up a pellet gun or a toy gun that was perceived as being a real gun. One thing led to another. He shot and killed in the Walmart. There was actually another woman who died of a heart attack because of just the disruption that took place in the Walmart. She was with her children. I believe she was with her children, and she died, unfortunately. But again, the question remains, in these cases, clearly security officers, police officers, people who are in authority positions want to stay safe. That's not the problem. The problem is when it comes to black young men and Latino men, is excessive force being used needlessly on these individuals, and particularly with black men? There's another case that happened in 2010 that relates to someone I know here in the Boston area. His name is this young man's name was DJ Henry. His father is a very prominent HR professional here in the greater Boston area. DJ was an athlete going to school in New York, was with his guys, his buddies, and was in his automobile. Something happens, an altercation or something happened, and he was shot and killed by the police. Back in 2010. His parents are aggressively trying to seek justice because of this case. We can go on and talk about Trayvon Martin, as I had mentioned earlier, and I would encourage you to go back to last year. I interviewed Warren Dawson, attorney Warren Dawson, who is the mentor for Daryl Parks and Benjamin Crump, who are representing Michael Brown, and you can learn about Stand Your Ground, Florida, the incidences of black men, obviously, who unfortunately die in the hands of the police and others who want to take authority into their own hands. And you can listen to that interview that was back around July of 2013. And there are just others. Sean Bell in New York, the gentleman who recently passed away who was in a chokehold by the police, and just the list goes on. Some of these cases deal with petty theft. Some of these cases may deal with men who have a record. But the excessive force is the critical piece that is the big concern that I'm concerned about. In 2012, the Children's Defense Fund issued a report called Protect Children, Not Guns, and this goes back to 2012. You can go to Children's Defense Fund, childrensdefense.org, childrensdefense.org, and see the entire report. But their report states that 5,740 children and teens die from gunfire in the United States between 2008 and 2009. 3,892 were victims of homicide, and almost half, 2,320, were black. The leading cause of death among black teens between the ages of 15 and 19 in 2008 and 2009 was gun homicide. Now, I'm sure that these figures go forward into our time period of 2014. Other stats talk about 3,352 boys were victims of homicide in the U.S. between 2008 and 2009. 3,034 were between the ages of 15 and 19. And 1,925 were black, 3% were black. Another staggering statistic, 34,387 children and teens suffered non-fatal gun injuries in 2008-2009. 26,000 were injured in gun assaults at 76%, and 13,000 were black, 51%. The rate of gun injuries was 10 times higher for black children and teens than it was for white children and teens. And then lastly, 23,604 boys were injured in gun assaults. This was between 2008 and 2009. 22,468 were between the ages of 15 and 19, and 11,619 were black. That's 52%. So black teens between the ages of 15 and 19, likelihood to be injured by a gun during an assault in 2009 equal 25 times more than white teens of the same age. So I would encourage you to go and read this report for yourself. It's the Children's Defense Fund. You can go to childrensdefense.org. What's the meaning of all this? It means that we have significant issues going on in the United States dealing obviously with gun violence. There's certainly a huge issue with black-on-black crime that is very troubling and statistically alarming. We have issues with police and the way people are policed in the United States. We see here in Ferguson where community policing desperately needed to calm down the crowds and calm down the community that is now very suspicious, including Leslie McSpadden, who is the mother of Michael Brown, very suspicious of how things are translating and transferring in terms of the way the dynamics go on between the community and the police. Eric Holder, our Attorney General for the United States, flew in to Ferguson. That helped to calm things down. He met with the parents. He met with community leaders to get a sense of what's taking place. And fortunately, there is a parallel investigation going on right now with the Justice Department on this case. This case is far from over. I'm hoping that Darren Wilson will be arrested. He needs to be tried. This, from my perspective, from what I can see in Ferguson, was excessive force used against an unarmed teenager. Number two is that there needs to be greater transparency with not only this police department, but other police events that take place within communities, because communities become very emotionally outraged when information is held from them or when there is a perceived cover-up. And this looks like some kind of perceived cover-up, since we've heard nothing in almost 3 weeks from Officer Darren Wilson. And then thirdly, there desperately needs to be diversity training throughout police departments, particularly the smaller ones, because many of these incidents that I have talked about, Trayvon Martin, DJ Henry, Michael Brown, all took place with smaller police departments. And there needs to be greater emphasis, greater money allocated for diversity training on all of these instances. I'm going to be talking more about this in the future. I'm a diversity professional. I am hoping to do more work with police departments so that the dialogue can be expanded, educational awareness can go up, and some of these age-old issues that go back to when this country was founded can somehow get resolved. We can't just keep sweeping it under the rug and having innocent and sometimes innocent and not so innocent people, and particularly black young men, get slaughtered the way that they're getting slaughtered in this country. We'll be back next week probably talking about this topic and others. Have a great Labor Day weekend. This is Carol Copeland Thomas. Empowerment begins when you believe in yourself. Stay tuned and take care. Have a great weekend.